Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You have to believe that you can do something that nobody else has done. And somehow that concept has to become reality.
Somebody's got to make a play to stop this draft. That last run, in fact, again, they push the pile for the first. And the pass is picked off. It's picked off by David Harris, who gets away from Brady. What a turn of events. Now being chased off by Carpenter at the 10-yard line. Suddenly, the Jets' defense responds when it looks like the Patriots were ready to drive it right down the field.
37, Matt Moore.
You're listening to No Fly Zone Radio with Victor Green.
Welcome to the No Fly Zone Radio Show, all the way from across the pond. Here are your hosts, Biff Sweeney and Richard Tinley.
Welcome to No Fly Zone Radio. This is your host, Biff Sweeney, and I'm joined with my good friend and friend to the podcast, Jets Nation Radio, Glenn Naughton. How's it going?
It's going well, man. Just, you know, a few days left of this madness and bickering and all this, all that comes along with draft season. So ready for it to kick off, ready for the Jets to be on the clock, and excited to see whether it's going to be at 10 or not.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for me, my preferred thing would be to trade back and but stay in the top 15.
Yeah.
It's like that. If you trade in, trade back, let's say, the Colts want to come up for the end because, let's say, for instance, the Bears go the end, Atlanta go the end, the last the end of the top three guys is sitting there at pick 10. The Colts, they'll probably want to come up for that the end because after that, there's a serious drop-off. So if they come up for to 10, give us 15 and whatever after that, Brock Bowers could be there. Thomas could be there. Yeah. Two ideal targets.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's my chosen scenario as well, is move down. But, you know, I feel like we say that every year because everybody's greedy. We all want more picks. We all want to stay in range to get a good player and add more picks. That's always the ideal scenario, whether or not teams are willing to give the Jets what they want. I think the big thing is going to be, are the teams right behind the Jets, the Broncos, the Raiders, are they going to be hoping to get a quarterback? Because really, they don't have one. And they're not going to get one, you know, if especially the Raiders. Like, I don't think if there's a quarterback on the board, I don't think they're falling past the Broncos because Sean Payton doesn't have a quarterback. And are you going to let a division rival take a quarterback versus calling the Jets and moving up? But the thing is, do they call the Bears and move up to 9 to be safe? Do they try to move up to 8 to be safe, you know, to get even, to not get leapfrogged by each other? So to me, I feel like, I mean, obviously you want to move down as little as possible. I feel like you can stay at 18, 19, 20 and still get a good player. Beyond that, like I pitched a scenario a few weeks ago just because, you know, you do so many mocks that you get bored and you start getting a little creative without getting too crazy. And, you know, that I did one and the Redskins offered me like 36, 40, and then another like a 70 something. And for the hell of it, I took it and said yes and saw what was there. And I got like three really good players, at least guys who I think are really good. I got McConkey. I got Tavondre Sweat because he fell. I forget who the second guy was, to be honest, but I looked, it made me think, like, with the depth at tackle and receiver in this class, would it be the worst thing in the world to drop down from 10 and drop down a lot, but still have, end up having four picks in the top 75, 76 versus two picks in the top 75? So there's a lot of options. Again, my perfect world is move down, still get Bowers and add a pick. The thing I'm hopeful for is it, you know, to me, the team like the Raiders are the X factor, because if they want to jump the Broncos, they could go to the Jets. And they've got more ammunition, more to trade than the Broncos do. Now, what can you get from the Raiders to move up a couple of spots? Generally speaking, you wouldn't expect much, but we all know that when the team you're dealing with knows you're moving up to get your new quarterback, the price goes up quite a bit. So it's not like the Jets are going to say, oh, well, you only want to move up three spots. Go ahead and, you know, give us a four. And in exchange for that, you can draft your franchise quarterback. That's not the way it works. So what could they get? Hopefully we find out. Hopefully the Jets move to 13. They get another pick or two, and then they add Bowers and go from there.
Yeah, exactly. Because the way I look at it now, if you move back and stay in the top 15, that's grand. You can hop on the likes of Bowers or maybe Thomas if they're there. Or if they're not there, you get the next best thing at offensive tackle. Because we all know when it comes to the Jets and the offensive line, the two don't really go together at the moment, because like 90% of the players the Jets have had in a long, long time have all been injured on the offensive line. It's like we're cursed. So if you go back too far, you could end up doing what the Giants done and let an absolute balls in their draft.
Well, and that's, again, I think the big factor here is the depth. I was actually just listening to a podcast with a former scout who was talking about, you know, the depth in this year's class and saying, you might now not, you know, you don't want to have to gamble in this range, but, you know, saying you might be able to get a starting tackle early round three. But my thing is, if they're going to get a tackle early on, if they're going to get a tackle in round one, I want it to be after a trade down. Like, you've got to have a two if you're adding a tackle that early, because again, well, you know, I understand the concern, like my ideal scenario is trade down, still get Bowers. Part of my ideal scenario includes the day after the draft, when free agency no longer counts toward comp picks, and you go out and sign a veteran tackle. Because there are some good veteran tackles. There are some backup level tackles out there. You've got Cam Fleming, who I like. He played a couple years ago under Hackett. He started 15 games for Hackett. He plays the left side. He plays the right side. He's a free agent who's out there. You know, Bakhtiari, I don't love that idea. I'm more okay with it as a backup. When people were talking about signing him as a starter, I thought that was insane. But signing him to be a backup who play a few games for you, I could live with, especially if, like, I like Carter Warren, but I don't want him as the second option. I would prefer him as the three. If Carter Warren is behind Bakhtiari, then again, that I could live with. But I think there are some veteran tackles, the Kansas City guy whose name is escaping me at the moment. I just talked about him yesterday.
Devin Smith.
Yeah, he started for the Super Bowl champions. You know what I mean? The Chiefs just won a ring with him starting. I think a Super Bowl starter is good enough to be a Jets backup at this point. He said publicly he wants to play for the Jets. So to me, the ideal scenario would be Bowers there, and then, you know, add a second. And even if you don't add a second, use that next pick on a receiver with the depth you have at that position, and or a tackle, but also get a veteran. Because, you know, something that people aren't talking, there's a few, I mean, listen, there's no, we can all paint a picture of how a pick can go wrong, no matter who the player is. But the thing for me with tackle with the Jets is there's a couple different things. You know, A, there's, of course, the playing time. Like, we could all agree that the chances of Moses and Smith playing 17 games apiece is nil. Like, whoever they draft is going to play. But we don't know how much they're going to play. What if Smith, I mean, Moses has only been hurt once, so he could play 16, 17 games. He's done it a million times. If Smith gets hurt and the tackle has to fill in, okay, fair enough, but how many games does it have to be to make it worth it? Is pick number 10 worth a guy who starts five games? Sit like six, seven? I don't feel like seven starts is worth the 10th pick overall. So if I'm going to get it, and the other piece is the learning curve. Like, I look, even though I'm a Bowers guy, if Bowers, like any other player could, if he struggles to get off to a quick start, I don't think it'll be that big of a deal. Because to me, Bowers gives the Jets a chance for their offense to go from being potentially good to being very good, or very good to great, however you want to look at it. Whereas, so if he were to struggle, you've still got Garrett Wilson, you've still got Conklin, you've still hopefully got Mike Williams healthy at some point. I'm sure they'll take another pass catcher at some point. There's still enough there to be okay. If you plug in Olufoshanu or some other tackle at left tackle, and he takes 8, 9, 10 weeks for the light to go on, if he plays that many games, what if the guy steps in as a rookie and you ask him to play five games and he's terrible? And you're like, man, we sure could have used a just a solid veteran. You're not getting Orlando Pace in free agency. But if you could have gotten a guy like Fleming or Bakhtiari to start four or five games, and they would have played it. So the learning curve is also a part of it to me, that if Bowers takes a little longer to come along, it's not going to impact the team as much than if a left tackle who you're going to plug in to start at some point needs 5, 6, 7 weeks to at least play at an acceptable level, and your quarterback's getting beat up for those 5 or 6 weeks. So there's that part of it too. But yeah, I agree that you don't want to trade too far back. And there's scenarios for every team where you could get it right, you can get it wrong. And really, if you're still, I'm still one of those people that thinks you need 3 years to know if you got it right in the draft. I know the thing today is 3 minutes. You know what I mean? Guy has a bad rep in training camp, and all of a sudden you shouldn't have drafted him. The people don't have the patience for it anymore. But this team, they don't have the luxury of saying, let's draft a guy who might not start this year, but he'll be good down the road. Like, and I've heard others say it. This to me seems to be the biggest disconnect among Jets fans. Is there are some fans who are saying, let's build for the future, and then some fans like myself who have said, you've done every single thing you possibly can up to this point to go all in. Why would you then pump the brakes on going all in and say, let's start drafting backups and future starters? Unless Joe Douglas thinks this is right now a Super Bowl roster, which I don't think he does. Like, drafting guys who won't play and our future, like that, to me, that's for teams that feel like, okay, we're ready to go in a Super Bowl. Now let's start drafting our future high-level backups and future starters. I don't think the Jets are at that point right now.
Yeah, and you mentioned an awful lot about the offensive tackles on both sides. But the other thing is that worries me on the offensive line is AVT. He hasn't played a full season since his rookie year. Like he's
Yeah, I know,
spent
and that's.
two half seasons, and like he's coming up to a payday a year. So for me now, if the Jets do trade back and take a tackle, I'm still taking a guard somewhere in the top four rounds.
Oh, absolutely. And there's some good guards out there, and I
Exactly.
also wouldn't, we talked earlier about trading down. Like, if the Jets were to move down to 22, 23, somewhere in that range, I would have no problem taking Graham Barton or Jackson Powers Johnson, somebody like that. Those guys are going to be great centers. But yeah, guard is definitely a concern. I really like Christian Mahogany out of Boston College.
He's a beast.
He's been mocked in a bunch of different spots, and I mean, he's a true guard. He's a big dude. Who, powerful hands, it moves much better than I thought. You go in to start watching these guys, and you click on their bio just to look at the measurements, and he's 320, 330. And he doesn't move like it. He's a big dude. He's a mauler who's been really good. So, whether you trade down and get a JPJ or a Barton early on, or somebody like Mahogany a little bit later, I think they absolutely have to address guard, because the AVT injuries are a thing. They have to decide soon on his fifth-year option. That's going to be an
Yeah.
interesting decision.
Here's a name for you, Glenn. A guy that you've met recently over in the Senior Bowl from Missouri, Javon Foster, 6'5" tackle. Like he's a guy I really like. I know you really like him. Like if he's there in the fourth or fifth round, I take him in a heartbeat
Absolutely.
because for me he could be your future right tackle. He could be your future right guard.
Yeah, I like him a lot. He was one of the guys that I kind of seeked out at the Senior Bowl, because I'd watched a ton of his film. I think that, I've heard some people say he's definitely going to move inside to guard. There are others feel he can play tackle. When I spoke to him in Mobile, he said that, they'd moved him to both tackle spots, and he did play inside a guard a little bit. But if I love the idea of a guy, and I'm sure a lot of people do, and I think the Jets at this point, as you mentioned, Biff, with all the injuries, they've got to be looking at this and saying, we've got to have some guys with some versatility. Having a guy like Foster, if you think he can play a little bit of guard too, he's got great length. His feet aren't elite, and I think that's why some people feel like he's got to play on the right side. I think you could live with him on the left side. I mean, he had some good, and I said to him, I said, against Ohio State, they made him work for it. It wasn't at the point where he made it look easy, but you're facing elite pass rushers when you're going against Ohio State, and he really held the zone. He kept the quarterback clean, and that was on the left side. So I think he's a guy. He's got the measurements. He's got the experience. He's played at a high level of competition. He's got a ton of starts. I would absolutely look at him at left tackle, but working him out at guard and right tackle would also be options, as he's one of those guys you could bring in who has that positional flexibility.
Yeah, and here's another guy, Glenn. And why I bring this guy up is because JD, Joe Douglas, really likes to take guys from Pitt. And Maccon Calvis is an offensive tackle. And like that, he would have seen a lot of him when he was scouting Carter. So, or Carter Warren, yeah. So he's another guy, but the problem is, like, from what I heard, he's... His feet's not great, but like that, you could stick him in there for a year behind whoever we have, and next year he could be a capable starter.
Yeah, I'd be curious. It would be funny to take him because you took Warren out of there last year, and both of them only played two games in their final year. So I don't know how much they would have seen him last year, because they wouldn't have seen much of Warren because he only played one or two games. I think one game last year, like I said, it may have been a couple, but Goncalves, same thing. I think he played three games this season. So to go back-to-back years with mid-round pit tackles who didn't play their senior year, you know, we'll see. But I don't have his measurements in front of me, but I recall thinking his arms were a little short, and I've heard he's another one like Foster. I've heard people say, you know, and sort of definitively, like, oh, yeah, he's a guard. He's going to play guard. But I don't think – you don't always know. Teams sometimes have a different vision of these players when they take them. So I think he's a possibility. Of course, that, you know, the Jets will be familiar with him because they would have scouted Pitt heavily given the fact they took two guys from it, and really three. They, you know, having taken the safety out of there a few years ago, who's with the Giants now. So that the Jets have scouted Pitt heavily. They've drafted a few players out of there. Pinnock is the guy I was trying to think of, Jason Pinnock. So yeah. The Jets have seen a lot of Pitt. Goncalves, again, is he a guy they feel can play? Can he be a guard and tackle? Is he just a guard? Is he going to stay outside of tackle? I think that's going to be the key. You know, the guys we've mentioned, they've got to get some guys with flexibility, which is funny to me because of the AVT stuff. I tweeted about that yesterday. I think it's funny. The number of people who yelled and screamed that you stop moving AVT around. That's why he gets hurt. And then they say, oh, and also draft Troy Fatanu. He's awesome. You can move him all around. I'm like, well, which one is it? Does moving guys cause injuries or not? I don't think it does. Yeah. I don't think if a dude is standing a couple feet to the left or the right is going to change whether or not his Achilles ruptures, or if his triceps tears. You know, I think it's some people just want, you know, some people want to feel comfortable and they feel like, oh, we know the reason he got hurt, and if we change that, he won't get hurt anymore. So let's blame it on position changes and stop changing. But like, if he gets hurt or not this year, it's not going to be because of playing right guard or right tackle, or left guard or left tackle. It's not as if one of them doesn't require you to run or push around other 350-pound human beings. So I find that paradox funny, but they do have to look on the interior, and Goncalves is a guy that I actually was watching Pitt earlier today to get a look at him, and Bub Means, who – Bub, that guy just doesn't play to his 40 time. He runs 4-4. He looks – he does not look like
receiver.
A 4-4 receiver. Yeah, Bub Means.
Yeah,
he does not look like. First couple times I watched him play, I thought he's a mid 4-5 guy, and then he ran in the 4-4s. But to me, he's sort of the perfect example of guys who don't always play to their time speed.
He's inconsistent. Yeah, Glenn, we all know we need to bolster up the offensive line depth. Round three, round four. Who are? Let's list off three names
for the O line.
For the offensive line tackle, if we don't take a tackle in round one, we're going for a weapon in round one.
Yeah, let me pull up the list here, because I just had it up. I just had the mid round offensive lineman. But you know, my favorite guy, like I said, at guard, my favorite guy is Mahogany, who I already mentioned, and you know, of course, at tackle, Foster is a guy that. That we've already talked about, but let's jump right in. I'm going to jump on here and take a look. Now we're talking third, fourth round guys. Let me see. Yeah, let's stick to tackles because that is where the big need is. Two guys, and actually we talked about this guy, and actually I think it's interesting, Biff. If you look at the top tackles in this class, I like a lot of their counterpart. I like a lot of the guys who play on the other side. Caden Wallace out of Penn State, I think he's a really good player. In fact, I was just a few weeks ago when I was watching Olufoshanu, my eyes kept going over to him, and I'm thinking, this is a guy who, and you see this sometimes, you see guys who are really good players but they get so outshined by a teammate that you don't hear about them. Jalen Polk in Washington at wide receiver is another example. We keep hearing Odunze, and then you turn on Washington and you're like, this dude can play too. Like, Jalen Polk's a good receiver. But Caden Wallace would be one
Exactly.
for Penn State. Then you got Fisher playing, Blake Fisher playing opposite Joe Alt. Now I don't know if he can be a right and left guy, but he's another one who's playing opposite a top 10 pick and isn't getting a lot of attention. A guy who I thought was really good at the Senior Bowl, Texas offensive tackle Christian Jones. He's a guy who's a possibility, and these are all sort of mid late round guys. Delmar Glaze, a big guy, good size, out of Maryland. I honestly, when I first watched him, didn't know what to think of him, but went back again a couple weeks ago and watched three or four Maryland games, and I liked him a lot more. I liked what I saw, so he's a guy that I kind of came around on. But maybe one of the most interesting guys is Kieran Amagaji out of Yale, because no one knows where this kid is going to go. He's another, every year we get these stories, we get these players who played an extremely high level at a small university, and so there are questions about level of competition and whether or not they can hold their own. But you watch Amagaji, guys got great strength,
He's a
and you
bulldozer.
which what's that?
He's a bulldozer.
He is, and when you watch these guys, you kind of, I've always said it, and you hear others say it, that when you're one of these small school guys, you've got to be dominant, because I mean, that's the expectation. If you're an NFL prospect and you're playing at Yale, you better be beating guys up consistently, and that's what Amagaji did. So he's someone that I've seen him projected in the second round, but I've seen him projected in the fourth round. Which, listen, a lot of it, you could have a guy who's the second guy on your board. You could have a team picking at 40 and they love him and they would take him, but they have one guy above him, so he could have gone at 40. But then he doesn't go till 70, and everyone thinks, oh, well, he wasn't a top 50 talent. Well, on somebody's board he was, but there was one guy ahead on their board. So, but I think Amagaji is one of the more interesting guys. But some of the, like I said, the Caden Wallace, Christian Jones, Delmar Glaze, these are all guys who have, especially Glaze played on the left side. Again, I don't, measurements I don't have pulled up in front of me, but just watching him, looked like a really long-limbed guy who was able to get out in front, pulling and getting outside. So I like Glaze, and I guess, his ability to get out in front was better than I thought it would be, since he's so big. But there are some guys out there to be had. But if I had to pick a favorite, if we're talking, it would probably be Christian Jones, but he's exclusively on the right side. And I think it's probably the same case for Caden Wallace. So maybe Glaze if you're looking for a left tackle. But there are some guys out there. But the concern, Biff, is, I say to people, show me the list of offensive linemen that Keith Carter has developed.
Yeah.
It's a very short list.
Exactly. Okay. Let's talk about the other position that everybody's talking about is wide receiver in the mid rounds. Like a guy I really like, and I think he's going to be gone in round two because I'd say between round one and two, there's at least going to be 15 wide receivers selected. I like Leggett. He reminds me of Anunua. I like Washington from Arizona as well. Or not Arizona, Virginia Tech.
Malik
Yeah,
Washington.
I really like him. Soft
Oh,
hands.
Virginia.
Virginia, sorry.
I do that. I do that all the time.
Third time lucky.
All the time. All the time. I'm always like, that's a Virginia guy. No, Virginia Tech.
Like Brendan Rice is another guy to spend time with. Spend time with him in the Senior Bowl as well. And to be honest, he looked decent to me in the Senior Bowl.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, listen, it's an interesting thing. In all honesty, I heard something today that gave me pause, because, and I was going to look at it a little deeper today and maybe discuss it on our show, with the guys when we do ours. I've been saying for a few years now, and not, you listen to anyone who covers the draft, and all we talk about is the last few years, or at least when it comes to wide receivers, the last few years, the depth, and you can get starters outside of round one, and you can get impact players in round two. This, as you just said, I've heard people say anywhere between 15 and 20 wide receivers in this class could be immediate starters, or immediate, like, legitimate contributors who will go in the top 2 rounds.
That does my
I feel
head
like we've
in.
been saying that. What's that?
That comment does my head in because, like, you look at Mel thing on ESPN, and
Mel Kiper.
He's always going on about you can get running backs in any round that can start. You can get wide receivers in any round in this draft because there's so many. But
right.
you have to hit on that exact wide
right.
receiver, that exact running back.
Right.
Because there could be one of six rounds that hits.
Well,
and it could
that's
be the
the
fifth
thing.
round.
That's what I heard today. It was the Move the Chains podcast, and they were talking about second round wide receivers over the last 3 years.
I heard that.
And I thought, oh, this will be good.
That was interesting.
And it's bad.
Yeah.
It's way worse than I thought. I was
Steve,
like, wow.
Look
for
at
all
us.
The talk. Because I say it too. I say it all the time.
Yeah,
oh, there's wide receivers all over the place.
We took Mims.
Yeah.
We
but
took
everybody
Stephen
missed in
Hill.
The second round. Everybody was bad. I don't
yeah.
There was one or two in the last 3 years out of they probably named 14, 15, 16 receivers taken in the second round, and maybe one or two of them were good. And I don't mean just bad, like these are like out of the league already, guys. And I'm hearing the names and I'm thinking, man, I remember liking that guy. Oh, I thought that
yeah.
guy was gonna be good. And a lot of people did. Because
I
a lot of
thought
people
Mims
have
was gonna
said,
be good.
yeah, a lot of people have said, you know, and like I said, it's anyone in the draft community. That's been the theme the last few years is, oh, there's and yeah, you can get one later. But for some reason, these second-round guys the last few years, I look at a guy like Ladd McConkey or Xavier Leggett. I love both those guys. And they're probably second, you know, I've seen some people say Leggett's a third-round guy. But, yeah, the bust rate has been shockingly high for a position where we've talked a lot about how much talent there is.
Yeah.
So
but
who's
even
to say, you know – because of recency bias, we're like, oh, well, yeah, but this year's class is different. Well, we won't know that for a few years. So maybe this year's class is the same, and there won't be five or six really good receivers in round two. Maybe there'll only be one.
Yeah.
We have to wait and see.
That's the thing. Like, but if you look at round three in the last few years, there's been a few wide receivers that have actually hit
right.
compared to
that,
round
and,
two.
And I think that was part of, like I said, it was. I literally just listened to that pod this morning.
Yeah,
and I thought I'm going to go through the like the last 3 years of drafts and look at where the wide receivers have been hitting, and it you know round two looks like it might be a little bit of a danger zone of some kind at wide receiver, which is bizarre. But I do feel like there are some players in this year's class. You know, having mentioned, you know, McConkey, Leggett was actually we did our guys episode the other day, and I believe I had Leggett as my guy at wide receiver who I would pound the table for. Just a great blend of size, speed,
yeah.
power, hands. Does a really nice job of high pointing the football. He, you know, he was fantastic for Spencer Rattler last year. And yet there are some good receivers. Ricky Pearsall, like I can't imagine Ricky Pearsall being a bust. He looks like a fantastic player to me. Javon
yeah.
Baker out of UCF. There's a lot of
I
good
like
ones.
Baker. I like
yeah.
Baker. And I like Ricky Pearsall as well. He actually reminds me of a much faster Eric Decker.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
And it's just much more athletic, like his ability to,
yeah.
I mean, we all saw the leaping catch over the middle, the one-handed, that might have been the best catch, that was the best catch in college football this year.
Yeah.
But he had other grabs, man, sort of, you know, over the shoulder, you know, from awkward angles, diving toward the sideline, great hands, and looked great at the Senior Bowl, so really helped his stock. And he's a guy that you hear it with everyone, though, there's always this wild ranges for some players. You know, one guy's got him going 25, another guy has him going 70, you know, and we get to find out in a few days who got it right.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, before we finish up, Glenn, is the quarterback position. We're not picking in round one, or we're not picking in round two, and I doubt we're picking in round three for a quarterback. So for me, it's round four onwards. Who are the guys that you think the Jets are going to look at? For me, the number one guy is Pratt because he's linked so much to the Jets.
Yeah, Pratt, I like Pratt. I wouldn't have a problem with the pick. You know, we talked about this on our show the other day. And funny enough, I heard it addressed by some folks who attended his pro day. So I'd said that he does a lot of things well, but the thing that worried me was not seeing the velocity on a lot of his passes that you'd like to see. When I think about if this team ever, God forbid, makes a playoff game, if you're playing a late season playoff game type atmosphere and some of the weather you'll encounter in the Northeast, like I want a guy who can throw the ball through into the wind and make a big pass. I wasn't sure Pratt could do that, but having said that, I heard some folks talk about his pro day. Said they adjust. They basically his arm looked a lot more lively at his pro day. They adjusted some things mechanically because they felt like he wasn't getting enough velocity as well. So they whoever was working with him saw it as well, and apparently teams that were in attendance said that that was something he worked on and corrected. But of course, not taking a quarterback at 72, I agree, unless and see. I don't think Spencer Rattler's going to fall that far. Rattler's a guy who I wasn't that high on coming into the season because of the previous character stuff. But, you know, then I kind of said, look, he was a teenager. Like, brush it aside. Give the guy a chance. Let's take a closer look. And I did say at the end of last year that I thought he looked much better. I thought he looked great in week one. That was one of the week one games I watched live. I thought he looked fantastic. And then went back and watched him extensively a couple weeks ago, and I was blown away. I mean, he had outside of Leggett, he had very little to work with. He didn't have a lot of support, and the number of throws I saw him make under duress, down the field, on the money, like throws that a lot of NFL quarterbacks couldn't make. And I thought this guy is way better than I thought he was going to be, way better than the previous version of him that I had seen. We had Emory Hunt on our show recently. He said he's got him as his quarterback four. So he, you know, he thinks, I think one of his bold takes, and I could be wrong, but I believe he said his bold take was that somebody would take Rattler at the bottom of round one. Not sure that'll happen, but it wouldn't shock me after what we saw. But in terms of guys who would be there a little bit later, like I said, Pratt, I wouldn't mind. My top choice for that range would be Jordan Travis from Florida State. Of course he had the injury, but I haven't heard anything that says he's not going to be able to make a full recovery. He's got great mobility. You know, when the play breaks down and he's got a you know, bail on a busted pocket, he does a great job of getting away from guys so he can make plays with his legs. Not, you know, some guys like a Pratt does enough athletically to he'll give you some runs, but Travis has the ability to make some eye-popping sort of difference-making runs, protects the football. Turnover. I think he threw four picks last year, something like that. And I've liked him for. I said before the year, I thought Florida State was going to be one of the most entertaining teams in college football. When you looked at the skill players all across the board, whether it was a receiver or running back, adding Jaheim Bell and you know, with Travis, and they were a really fun team to watch. And Jordan Travis was a big reason for that. But then looking at later rounds, a few guys that you could get on day three, I would think Devin Leary from Kentucky, who is a guy who went to NC State with a lot of big expectations, and he kind of fell short. But he did look really good at times. Then he goes to Kentucky. Things didn't work out well. And I think it's tough when guys, you transfer and you have 1 year to get it together. But a couple of his games I watched, tons of
He's
drop passes and felt like, he's probably better than what's that?
been injured a good bit as well
Yeah,
in Kentucky.
but yeah, and as a day three guy though, the I wouldn't worry me too much. Keaton Slovis is another one. I think his name is sort of bouncing around enough lately that initially I thought he'd be there in round seven. I don't know that he will now. Jason Bean might even go undrafted in this class, but he's a guy out of Kansas who got to play because their starter Jalen Daniels was hurt this year and didn't get to see the field a whole lot. And Jason Bean, man, he's an older guy, but listen, because of COVID, we're seeing a lot of older prospects. There's a lot of guys who are going to be drafted, and they're going to be 24, 25, 26 years old. Bean is one of those guys. I think he's 25, but he's got a big arm, a live arm. He's got a lot of experience. He's another one. You'll see him break a 40, 50-yard run from time to time. I think he's a developmental quarterback who you want to be sort of long-term backup spot starter type of guy. I would go with him. But if you're talking about guys with a future as a starter in the league, it would be more the Jordan Travis, the Pratt, the Leary, Slovis, those types of guys who would be, again, developmental, but could start for you one day.
For me, it's either Pratt or it's Travis. The other thing is, and I've heard it recently, is that, and you mentioned it about Pratt's arm not being as strong as what you'd like. I've heard the very same thing about Travis. But
Yeah,
now,
I mean,
the only thing is, I didn't see him push the ball down the field enough. But like that, he can come into a camp, an NFL weight room. Killed himself up. We've seen, for instance, Tom Brady didn't have the biggest arm. He worked
right.
on it, and look at him now.
Yeah. And that with Travis, I don't, and I could be wrong. I don't know if they had, well, no, Travis, of course, wouldn't have participated, but, I don't, you know, I'm not saying Travis has a cannon for an arm, but I don't remember having the same concerns that I had with Pratt. So I don't know if they're in the same class in that regard. But to be fair, you know, because of the injury with Travis, it's been a little while since I've watched him. But from what I recall, I remember liking his arm strength better than Pratt. But Pratt threw with really good touch. You know, Pratt, you know, throwing to multiple levels, like he does a lot of things. I wouldn't be unhappy with either one. I'm not sitting here saying don't take Pratt. I'm just saying that as I'm watching him move the ball down the field, he's got several throws where I just think, does that work in 25, 30 mile an hour winds in a, you know, in a playoff atmosphere? But listen, let the Jets get there first, right? And and worry about it then.
Yeah, and going back to a guy Slovis from BYU, that guy worries me, especially in MetLife Stadium, because his hands are so small. He's the smallest hands for a quarterback seemingly in this draft. That's not going to be good in the winter months in MetLife Stadium. The other thing is, a guy that came out of the combine with rave reports with his arm is Joe Milton. But it's kind of weird because as big as the arm is, how big he is and athletic he is, and how flashy he comes across, nobody's talking about.
Yeah, well, we talked about him a
Nobody's
little bit
thinking.
before the season because I watched him
But
last year when Hendon Hooker went down.
why I'm
What's
saying
that?
nobody's talking about him is because none of the media is linking him to any visits or anything. They're not talking about him.
Yeah, that's I haven't heard his name in that regard, and I think I wonder if he heard him. I mean, the opt out thing is getting out of hand now. You know, when guys opted out of bowl games, it used to be because they were top 10, top 15 picks and they didn't want to risk injury. And now you have Joe Milton, who's probably going to be an undrafted free agent, and he opts out. Like it, that, I think, I don't know if things like that are hurting players or if teams, I mean, if they think you can play, they're going to get past it. But I don't know what to think of Milton. Like I said, I sent a couple of his highlights to my co-host, Dylan Terriman. Last year, after Hendon Hooker went down, and watching Milton play a couple of games, and I was like, "This guy has what an incredible arm! You know, one of the better arms you'll ever see." So went into this year with high hopes for him, high expectations. And I mean, he had moments where you saw it, but oftentimes just too erratic. You know, off target. He had some games where he put it all together, and the throws were there, and then he would have other games where he just didn't look like a draftable prospect. So I don't know that he'll get taken. I mean, I think with his traits, he'll get drafted. I think somebody is going to say, you know, let's see what we can do with this kid. Especially, you know, it's tough projecting this year because, you know, you listen to Jim Nagy, who runs the Senior Bowl down in Mobile, and he said several times because so few underclassmen have declared, he thinks this is the weakest day three in years. Like he thinks there's a lot of guys who would have previously been undrafted. But this year they'll get drafted because the numbers aren't there.
All right, before we finish up, because we're running out of time, Glenn, in your mind, who do you think the Jets are going to pick if they stick at 10? I have two names.
If they stick at 10, I think it's going to be Bowers. As long as he falls, I think San Diego might take him. I think the Bears are an option to take him. But if he's there, it's Bowers or the best available receiver. But I think they're going to look to trade down.
Yeah, I hope to trade down, but for me, if he's there, I want Odunze. He's my guy. I'd be happy with Bowers, as long as they're going to know how to use him. That's the new thing.
Again, with this staff.
The other player that's really grown on me lately is Thomas of LSU. Wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Thomas.
Sports Social Podcast Network.